Okay, so Easter is nearly here, and Easter for society at large is one of those few times, rare moments in the year whenever people really start hearing a little bit and thinking a little bit about Jesus, about who Jesus is, about what he did, even on the news or even on like BBC website, wherever you might find something about Christianity and who Jesus is. And in the passage that we want to look at, and in our society, we sort of see at times Jesus and society colliding. And at times, whenever you hear our society and secular journalists, whatever, talking about Jesus, if you know the truth about who Jesus is, so often they get it wrong. So often they really misunderstand who Jesus is and what he came to do. So this morning, I want to just look at a moment whenever somebody encountered Jesus. And I see these sort of clash of worldviews, clash of cultures coming together. And we read about it in John chapter 18. If you have a Bible, in John chapter 18. And it's whenever Jesus, in the run-up to his crucifixion, he encounters Pilate, Pontius Pilate, who was a Roman governor. And Jesus is taken to Pilate to be questioned. And the Jewish leaders who are under Roman authority, they want to try and get the Romans to crucify Jesus. They don't want him to put him to death themselves. They hate him because he's so popular and they disagree with what he's saying. They want to get rid of Jesus. But they don't really have the courage to do it themselves because they're afraid if they get rid of Jesus, he's so popular with the crowds. What will the crowds say? So their plan is, right, we will get the Romans to do it for us. We'll get the Romans to put Jesus to death. But Pilate is kind of standing in the way. And to get Romans to do this, the Jews need to persuade Pilate to agree, yes, Jesus, this guy, he's either mad or he's bad. Let's get rid of him. And we see this happening in John chapter 18 and verse 28. This is God's word. Then the Jewish leaders took Jesus from Caiaphas, who was the high priest, to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early morning, and to avoid ceremonial uncleanness, they did not enter the palace because they wanted to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate came out to them and asked, what charges are you bringing against this man? Even notice there the sort of madness, the inconsistencies of the Pharisees. So here they are, they're trying to basically kill Jesus. They're on a mission to have Jesus murdered. And they come to the Gentile place of Pilate's and they won't go in because they don't want to be ceremonially unclean. They want to celebrate the Passover. So on one hand, they're willing, they're up for murder. But on the other hand, we don't want to be ceremonially unclean. And so but Pilate asks them, well, what charges? What's he done wrong? Verse 30, if he were not a criminal, they replied, we would not have handed him over to you. Which when you think about it, what sort of answer is that? Like a judge asks, okay, what's this guy done wrong? Why are we sentencing him? And the lawyer says, well, I mean, if he hadn't done something wrong, we wouldn't have brought him to court. Of course, he's a criminal, but doesn't really answer the question. Pilate says, take him yourselves and judge him by your own law. Pilate doesn't really want to get involved. He probably knows that to get involved in a kind of as he sees just this inter-religious dispute, Pilate doesn't really want to get sucked in. Just sort it out yourselves. They say, but we have no right to execute anyone. They objected. Verse 32, this took place to fulfill what Jesus had said about the kind of death he was going to die. So they were saying, well, look, it's not our place. As the Romans, that's your place to execute people. Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus, and here we go. He asks Jesus, are you the king of the Jews? So here we have Pontius Pilate, powerful Roman governor. He's got this guy, Jesus, in front of him. He's trying to really suss out, what's the truth here? What's the truth of this guy, Jesus? People are saying he's a criminal. He deserves death. Jesus, are you the king of the Jews? Is what he asks him in verse 33. Jesus says, is that your own idea? Jesus asked. Or did others talk to you about me? I just want to think about three things, three really questions. And the questions really we want to look at this morning, I mean, Pilate is supposed to be the one questioning Jesus. But actually what we see really is happening is that Jesus is the one questioning Pilate. And every time Pilate goes on the attack, Jesus is the one examining Pilate. And maybe this morning, if you're here and you haven't thought much about Jesus, or maybe you are, or maybe you've got lots of questions or objections you bring to Jesus, my prayer this morning is that you will find this morning, not just this morning will just be about you bringing your questions to Jesus, but I pray that maybe you will find actually Jesus searching and examining your heart. And maybe you'll find Jesus questioning you this morning. Jesus says to him, "Is that your own idea? Or did others talk to you about me?" Pilate says, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And really, Jesus is saying to Pilate, "Is that you asking? Or are you asking on behalf of someone else?" Because Pilate, what Jesus thinks, is trying to get at Pilate, "Pilate, really you're just coming here asking questions on behalf of the religious leaders. You aren't asking your own questions. You aren't thinking for yourself here. You're just saying what they have told you to say. Am I talking to you, Pilate? Or am I talking about all the things, the people who have influenced you, who you are allowing to influence you? Are you thinking about this? Are you thinking this through? Am I dealing with you? Are you thinking this through for yourself?" Because Pilate was under pressure. He'd made a mess of some uprisings before, and he'd ended up slaughtering many of the Jewish people. And so he's really unpopular with the Jews. And he was almost on his last warning with his higher-ups. "You need to get this right. You need to handle this right." And so for him, when the Jews come and say, "We have this guy, we don't like him, we want to put him to death," it'd be so easy for Pilate just to do what they say, just to go along with it because of the sort of political pressure, to just agree with them. And Jesus is saying to Pilate, "Pilate, are you just going with the flow? Are you just doing this because it's popular, because that's what they want you to do? Or are you thinking about this for yourself?" And Jesus perhaps is asking us the same question this morning. As we approach thinking through, who is Jesus? What does he mean for me? What is Jesus this morning dealing with you? Or are you bringing and allowing yourself to be influenced by all the things behind you? They say that you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. So think about the five people you spend the most time with. Apparently we are so influenced by others around us. We sort of become a composite of the people around us. And we pick up their traits. Maybe you find yourself doing this. I think I'm quite like that. I'm quite malleable. If I spend time with someone, I'll find myself like picking up their tics or their phrases or the way they word things. But we are influenced. We are so easily influenced. And I wonder, what is it that is influencing us? Whenever we come to the big decisions in life, whenever we come to the ultimate decisions, we can be influenced on lots of wee things. And that's why advertisers spend millions and billions of pounds every year trying to subtly and subliminally influence us into buying their products, because we are easily influenced. And maybe it doesn't really matter in those small things, but in the big things, the big questions, what is it really that influences you? What motivates you? What are the questions behind the questions? And for I'm going to say younger people, but not just necessarily younger people, where do we spend so much of our time? What is it that influences us? And so much of where we get our worldview, so much of what shapes our worldview, so often is the media and online. And we go there and we allow that to shape what we think. We allow that to shape the way we look at the world. So if we get all of our news from Facebook, if we allow YouTube, I'm guilty of this, I love going on, watching videos and things about how the world works. But so often we invest so much of our time, we outsource so much of our brain at times to those places. We allow that to shape the way we look at the world. That shapes our worldview. If you read regularly The Guardian, you probably voted to remain. If you regularly read the Daily Mail, you probably voted to leave. I'm not going to say what I read or how I voted. But those things influence us. And it's the same then whenever it comes to Jesus. What are the things that motivate and influence us? A challenge that was brought to me whenever I was younger was that whenever I really started to own my Christian faith, people would say to me, but you're just a Christian because you were brought up in a Christian home. I mean, that's just you just, you know, that was why you're a Christian. You just inherited it from your family. And that really, that troubled me. I had to think that through, and I still do have to think that through at times. Why do I believe? Do I believe because I really believe it and believe it's true? Or because it's just, it's been formed by my environment? It's because of what I've inherited. It's my influences, my background. I thought that through, but then one day it dawned on me that the people who were saying that to me, they were saying, you're a Christian because you're from a Christian home. People who were saying that to me were unbelievers, atheists, agnostics, whatever, but from an atheist, agnostic background as well. That's the way they were brought up as well. And I found as I grew up and left Sunday school and entered the real world, actually my beliefs, what I believe, and my environment actually changed. And to be a Christian today is actually, it's not comfortable. It doesn't fit easily, often, with your environment. It is difficult. And it makes you think, do I really believe what I believe? But for so many people, they don't believe. And in their environment, all they live and breathe, the world around them says, don't believe, Jesus isn't true, there's no God, eat, drink, be merry, for tomorrow you die. So their beliefs and their environment are perfectly compatible. And what I would say is, if your beliefs and your environment are perfectly compatible, then maybe you do need to think, why do I believe what I believe? Is it just because of I'm inherited? Is it just because I live in an echo chamber? Everybody around me tells this, says the same thing, and yeah, I just go with the flow. Just do what everybody else says. Whatever the BBC says, whatever the Guardian says, whatever the media says, I just allow that to influence me. Don't really question it. Just float along. Or am I really willing to step back and say, well, actually, what do I believe? Because today, to be a follower of Jesus isn't easy. The environment you're in isn't easy. But I do believe it's true. To be someone who doesn't believe in Jesus, secular, agnostic, atheist, whatever, I would say it's fairly easy. You just go with the flow. It's inconsistent, and we'll think about that in a second. I do really deeply, profoundly believe to be an atheist is inconsistent, but it's easy. And so Jesus is challenging Pilate, why do you believe what you believe? What influences you? What's motivating you? And then Pilate responds. He says, am I a Jew? Pilate doesn't really quite get what Jesus is getting at. Am I a Jew? Your own people and chief priests have handed you over to me. What is it you have done? And you see the real thorough job they're doing of investigating Jesus. What is it you have done? So Pilate actually has to ask Jesus. You know, Pilate doesn't bring any charges against him. He asks Jesus himself to confess. What have you done wrong? Jesus says, my kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place. This must have blown Pilate's mind. My kingdom is not of this world. Pilate's looking to know from Jesus, right, you're saying people are saying you're a king. What sort of king are you? What sort of leader are you? What sort of army do you have? What's your plan? What's your plan of attack? And Jesus is saying, my kingdom is not of this world. Because Pilate is fundamentally misunderstanding who Jesus is, what type of person Jesus is. The picture here. So this appeared whenever Louis van Gaal, if you remember, was appointed to the job of being Man United coach. This picture was put in to announce the news of Louis van Gaal. And it's not a great picture, but if you can see clearly, you'll notice that that's not the famous Man United manager, but it's actually Harold Bishop of Neighbours. So you'll see here more clearly. So Harold Bishop on the side and Louis van Gaal on the other side. So somebody, whoever it was just putting that news clip together, wanted to find Louis van Gaal and put him in the newspaper and got him mixed up with Harold Bishop. Now, both great managers, Van Gaal, okay, international club manager, Harold Bishop, a great coffee shop manager. But they're two completely different orders. They're two utterly different people. To get them mixed up is mad. And Pilate, whenever he comes to Jesus, fundamentally misunderstands who Jesus is, what he is about. He thinks Jesus is just about soldiers, battles, victory. He's trying to get power. When Jesus is saying, maybe there's more to this life than just power. Maybe there's more to this life than just success. And maybe I'm not, you could put me on the throne of Jerusalem. Jesus saying, but maybe I'm interested in more than that. I don't know if you've ever heard of breaking the fourth wall. It's in a TV show or a movie whenever a character turns to the camera. So people are talking, it's a normal TV movie, and the character turns to the camera and speaks, not to any of the characters, but speaks down the camera, speaks directly to you. So if you're my age, you're probably brought up watching Malcolm in the Middle. I think, didn't Malcolm do that? Spoke down the camera, or Ferris Bueller's Day Out? Anybody remember Ferris Bueller? He did that as well, spoke directly down to the character. And it was acknowledging that this wee world that they live in, this TV show, this set, whatever, there's more than that. And it looks directly down the camera and says that there's a bigger world out there. And Jesus, with Pilate, is kind of nudging him. And if Jesus is breaking the fourth wall, he's nudging the Pilate and saying, Pilate, maybe there's more than just power. Maybe there's more than just being successful. Maybe there's more to life than just this. And I think as Christians, as we live out our faith, before at times we even get into the gospel and Jesus' death, resurrection, for many people they just maybe need a little nudge. Maybe there's more to life than just material. Maybe there's more to life than just trying to gather up as much as you can and have as much pleasure and success and trying to live as long as you can and then die. Maybe there's more to life than this. Because the reality is that people, that's the way people live. People do live. Christians, non-Christians, whoever, everybody lives as if there's more to life than this. We're going to watch a wee short video, just about a minute and a half or so, that explains that really fundamentally all of us live out as if there's more to life than this.
Can you be good without God? Let's find out. Absolutely astounding. There you have it. Undeniable proof that you can be good without believing in God. But wait, the question isn't, can you be good without believing in God? The question is, can you be good without God? See, here's the problem. If there is no God, what basis remains for objective good or bad, right or wrong? If God does not exist, objective moral values do not exist. And here's why. Without some objective reference point, we have no way of saying that something is really up or down. God's nature provides an objective reference point for moral values. It's the standard against which all actions and decisions are measured. But if there's no God, there's no objective reference point. All we're left with is one person's viewpoint, which is no more valid than anyone else's viewpoint. This kind of morality is subjective, not objective. It's like a preference for strawberry ice cream. The preference is in the subject, not the object. So it doesn't apply to other people. In the same way, subjective morality applies only to the subject. It's not valid or binding for anyone else. So, in a world without God, there can be no evil and no good. Nothing but blind, pitiless indifference.
Okay, maybe quite hard to totally get your head around all of that. And the rest of the video is very good. Can you be good without God? If you look it up on YouTube. But basically what it's saying is that if you take God out of the picture, you have no standard for right or wrong, good or evil. Ultimately, it becomes, if you take out that objective standard out there, it becomes ultimately a matter of preference. So I can say, I believe this is right, I believe this is right and wrong, but you might have a completely different standard of right and what's wrong. But that's not the way people believe. No, not the way people live. You can say, well, I just believe it's a matter of preference, right or wrong. But if I or somebody comes up to you tomorrow and steals your phone, you don't say, I believe it's my preference, my deeply held belief, that is wrong. You say, that is wrong. That is definitely wrong. It feels wrong. It is wrong. To deny the Holocaust is a crime. So you go out and write and tell people the Holocaust didn't happen. It is a crime. Why? Because what happened then was evil. And it matters. So for you to say that that evil didn't exist or didn't happen is wrong. The Holocaust was wrong. Not, I believe it was wrong. It's not a matter of opinion. There probably are people in this world today who think it was a good thing. But it's not opinion. It's not preference. It is wrong. And who gets to decide that? It's not me. It's not you. And I think we instinctively all know and all act out as if there is a higher standard, a higher objective. There is more to this world than just what I believe or what I think or what I want. There is a higher power. There is a higher kingdom. And it's the same, we don't have time to get into it, the same with love. Is love just purely chemicals in the brain, just purely feelings? I think deep down we know that love is more than just my feelings. Same with beauty. Beauty is not, it's something more than just preference. There's a God of glory who ascribes and designs in this world in a beautiful and a glorious way. A famous quote from C.S. Lewis, which you may have heard before, if I can get up on the slide, where Lewis said, If I find in myself desires which nothing in this world can satisfy, the only logical explanation is that I was made for another world. So we find ourselves in this world living as if there is a higher truth, living as if there is a higher kingdom who says there's right and wrong, living as if love is real, living as if beauty is real. So Richard Dawkins can say, you know, there is no good or evil, there's just blind indifference. That's not the way he lives. He lives out. I'm sure he's a very good person in practice. He lives as if there is good. He lives as if there is evil. And if that's the way we live, and that's the way we feel deep down, if we feel and we live as if we were made for another world, then maybe that's because we are. And that's what Jesus is saying to Pilate. My kingdom is not of this world. And I'm running out of time fast. But Pilate, again, doesn't understand. All Pilate can grasp onto is that Jesus has admitted that he's a king. You are a king then, said Pilate. Jesus answered, you say that I am a king. In fact, the reason I was born and come into this world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. Pilate replies, what is truth? With this, he went out again to the Jews gathered there. So Jesus says, Pilate presses Jesus again. And Jesus gets, it was really to the heart of why he came. He came to bring, to share the truth. Pilate is deeply unimpressed. What is truth? And that's it, conversation over. He walks away. Because for Pilate, again, what matters is what works. Don't tell me what's true. Don't tell me about what's good and noble. Don't tell me about spirit. Tell me what I want to see what works for me. And when Jesus starts talking about truth, who cares? And for many people today, it's not so much about the way they live in, so much about what's true, it's about what works. And the problem, if you like, with Christianity is that at times it looks like it doesn't work. It looks like it's counterintuitive. I mean, Jesus stood up in front of people and said, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Whenever that's lived out, it looks at times like Christianity doesn't work. But and with this, I'm very nearly finished. I'll close with this. I'll compare it to I've been thinking about dieting recently. First time in my life I've ever been thinking about dieting. Long overdue. But think of two different types of diets, two extremes. You could have a total fast diet where you just don't eat anything. Okay, you want to lose weight, want to get results, no breakfast, no lunch, no dinner, no supper, don't eat. Would that work? Probably, well, it would. It would work pretty quickly. You would very quickly start to lose weight. It would work. But would it be good in the long run? No, wouldn't be healthy. The opposite is the diet that I've been on my whole life, the seafood diet. I'm sure you're familiar with it. You seafood, you eat it. Just eat whatever you want. Don't care. Don't think about tomorrow. Just eat it. It feels good. Those are kind of two approaches, and there can be two approaches to life as well. We just do whatever we think works. So working very hard, getting money, getting as much as you can, piling it up, works, looks good. Or the other side of life is just do whatever feels good, live for pleasure, whatever. They both look in the short term like they work, but are they healthy in the long term? Whereas a good dad is identifying what's good for me. At times it'll mean saying, I can't eat this thing which I really, really want to eat. But it also will mean I will eat something. But a good dad can be difficult, but it's good for you. And it's true. And it will bring wholeness and health in the long run. So you can pray for me. But a good dad is good for you. And whenever we come to the claims of Jesus, we can't just assess it with, does it work in the short term? Does it work straight away? Jesus says, if you really want to follow him, he is God. He knows more, he is bigger, he has a bigger plan than us. It will involve us surrendering to him. It will involve sacrifice. But is it true? Is it good? Is it good now? Does it bring wholeness in this life? Yes, it does. Does it bring wholeness eternally? Yes, it does. Pilate is so interested, or appears to be so interested in getting to the truth of who Jesus is. The truth, he wanted to get to the truth. And the amazing thing is, what he didn't realize, he says, what is truth? He thinks it's impossible to get to in the end. When the truth is not just there objectively as a fact, but the truth is there sitting in front of him. Because in chapter 14, Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. But Jesus is trying to lead Pilate towards the truth is not just out there or in here, but truth is in the person of Jesus. That this life is not all that there is, that we are made for a bigger world, and we were made by and we were made for the person of Jesus. I wonder this morning if you're on that journey of trying to work out this life, what all it means, who Jesus is. Would you think about not just facts and stats and figures, but would you think about the person of Jesus? That true truth is found in Jesus. He shows us the reality of this world, makes sense of this world, is consistent with the way the world works, but also more than just that kind of truth, Jesus brings us into true knowledge of our Creator. We find the purpose for which we were made in Jesus. We find peace. We find not just intellectual truth, but we find truth for our souls, which we can rest upon. One of my favourite quotes, I've probably quoted every time that I've preached the last while, is Augustine, who said, our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you. And Jesus, I think, is appealing to Pilate, find your rest in me. And Jesus this morning is appealing to you. If you're on that journey, if you're thinking, questioning, why not look at, why not rest in the truth of who Jesus is? Let's pray. Father, we thank you that you are truth. We thank you to Jesus who said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And help us as followers of Jesus to follow him in truth, and to live it out in our lives. And help for anybody here this morning who's thinking that through for themselves. Lord, that you would just open their eyes, show them the truth of who you are. In Jesus' name.